allergy and sleep medicine. Details at goodsenses.com. This is WFAE News.
Support for NPR comes from Fox Searchlight Pictures, the studio behind Juno and Little Miss Sunshine, presenting the new summer comedy The Way, Way Back, starts Friday.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There have been so many fad diets, weight loss, and exercise programs that you've probably lost count. Perhaps you've tried some, even many of them, with various results. Perhaps you're overweight, and try what you will, nothing seems to work. Have you ever considered that perhaps it's not your fault? Now, come on, be honest. Of course you have. And you may have been right. We humans were not designed to sit still all day tapping on a keyboard. For most of us, exercise has been relegated to the gym instead of being part of life. And as for the foods we eat, some believe that our body chemistry was set a couple of million years ago and is simply not compatible with the modern diet. We haven't changed, but farming and food processing has. So what's the answer? Eat and live like a caveman. But how to do that in the 21st century, and would you really want to? For more information on that, we turn to Dr. Philip Kaczynski, MD. We've had him on the program in the past. He's a former clinical professor of pediatrics and author of Health Secrets of the Stone Age, and he joins us by phone from San Diego. We're somewhere near Oceanside, actually, California, where it's very early in the morning. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Mike. Glad to be here.
And here in our Spirit Square studio is Amber Lewis. She is owner and founder of Mod Paleo, a locally owned prepackaged paleo meal service. That's a first. Thanks. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get too deeply into all of this, just broad strokes here, and I'd like to hear from both of you on this, but I'll start with you, Amber, because you're here in the studio. What is a paleo diet?
So it's getting back to natural whole foods, so the way that we were meant to eat. It's cutting out sugars, processed foods, anything that was made in a factory, I always tell people, and getting back to sourcing your food locally from local farms, 100% grass-fed meat, pasture-raised pork, chickens, locally raised vegetables when they're in season, and organic whenever possible.
And I know we talked extensively about some of the health secrets of the Stone Age when you were on this program before, Dr. Kaczynski, and I know that your recommendations are not necessarily the same as the strict paleo diet, but how would you define it, and where do you diverge?
Well, the divergence is pretty minimal. What I like to promote is what's called the true Mediterranean diet, Mike. And that is very similar to what Amber has promoted. And by the way, I do have a criticism of Mod Paleo, and that is you folks are so far away from San Diego that I can't get those products, which I love. And those menu lists sound just terrific. I'm sorry that I'm not closer to be able to share in that. But the diets really are very similar. One of the things about the Mediterranean diet is a misconception that a lot of people have that it consists of a lot of pasta, and that's just not true. The primary ingredients of the real Mediterranean diet are mostly fruits, vegetables, with some tubers like potatoes, a relatively small amount of pasta on a regular basis, almost no dairy products because, in fact, the Mediterranean climate is not conducive to keeping fresh milk around for very long. Remember that they only got refrigeration after the war for most of those areas. And the amount of cheese that they have, which some people also think is a heavy component of the Mediterranean diet, is a fairly small amount. And I've been in the habit of saying that the amount of cheese that you and I would have on a single slice of pizza would last the Mediterranean family for a couple of days because they use it as a garnish and is not part of the main course.
Let's back up for just a couple of seconds because we've switched from the paleo diet to the Mediterranean diet.
Right.
There's a difference? There must be a difference.
Yeah, the difference is very small. The paleo diet does not include any dairy products, which would rule out cheese, for instance. And the paleo diet also does not contain any grains, which would eliminate pasta. Yeah.
And let's be clear about the Mediterranean part of this, because when you think Mediterranean and you talk about pasta, you automatically think of Italy. And that's not necessarily the kinds of foods that we're talking about here, is it? It's more like what they would eat in perhaps the Levant area.
Exactly, which is where the grain farming began. Agriculture began in that area that's known as the Fertile Crescent. And, of course, there are about 17 different countries that surround the Mediterranean. So there are so many varieties of the Mediterranean diet that it would seem that they are very different from each other. But they are really very similar. They're based basically on vegetables, with some fruits. They have no sugar in that diet. They eat very little meat. There's no beef industry in the Mediterranean area. So when you really compare the two side by side, the differences between the true Mediterranean diet and the paleo diet are really minimal.
Now, Amber, you say up front that you are not a doctor, you Correct. Are not a scientist, you are not a nutritionist in the traditional sense of the word. You're not even a chef. So you've started this business serving up prepared paleo-style meals. Not to be rude here, but how? Why? What qualifies you to do this?
Well, experience. I mean, I've got a terrible family history of heart disease. My mom has never been able to be, you know, cured or fixed from her heart disease. They've just loaded her up with a bunch of medications and a bunch of surgeries. And I didn't want to end up like that. And so I realized I had to change my life. And we started with CrossFit, and that's how we got into the paleo.
That's a training company.
Yes, it is a training.
Kind of a gym thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Started with CrossFit, and a lot of times paleo goes hand in hand with CrossFit. We got into the paleo lifestyle, and I saw some huge health changes in myself. I had a lot of digestive issues that went away pretty quickly. My husband had been on high blood pressure medication at 30 years old. He went off within 6 months. So we saw a lot of really good improvements health-wise for us.
Could that have been the exercise, or could it have been the diet, the blood pressure particularly?
We had been doing CrossFit for about a year, year and a half before we started paleo. So it didn't happen
until the diet changed.
Right. The exercise had something to do with it, mm-hmm. too. The diet really, really helped. He had been slowly kind of cutting back on his medication, but my digestive issues had never gone away just with the exercise. It wasn't until I took the gluten out of my diet that I really saw a big difference health-wise.
Dr. Lauren Cordain, I think that's how you say his or her name, is a Colorado State University professor who wrote the book, The Paleo Diet. Dr. Cordain says that clinical trials have shown that the paleo diet is the optimum diet that can lower the risk of cardiovascular disease, blood pressure, markers of inflammation, help with weight loss, reduce acne, promote optimum health and athletic performance. Doctor, you agree with that assertion? And I guess could the same be said of the diet that you advocate, this Mediterranean diet?
Yeah, I do agree with that. Lauren Cordain is a brilliant guy and has published several papers that support what he has to say. And one of the things that Amber pointed out regarding the digestive problems is typical of what's going on in this country, and that is that there are so many people that do have a sensitivity to gluten that does affect their performance, their overall general health, that staying on a paleo diet, which eliminates gluten-type products, is certainly a beneficial issue. And the fact that it eliminates some what are called anti-nutrients that are found in grains also contributes to that. Anti-nutrients do things like block the uptake of iron and calcium and zinc, for instance, and those are three minerals that are critical to our good health, and that's just not a problem on the paleo diet.
Yeah, there are those who say that the human body is not able to properly utilize cereal grains and dairy products. You say that's right. The body
That's
is
correct.
Not designed to do that. So why have we, I don't want to use the word evolved, but why have we transitioned into a food chain that really is based on grains and has been for thousands of years?
Well, that's because humans, to use a term that I have discussed in the past, are creatively lazy, Mike. And it was a lot easier to grow cereal grains than other types of vegetables. And the fact that they can be grown in large quantities and processed with very simple tools made it easier for early humans to switch over from grain, from fruits and vegetables to grains, which now constitute, by the way, about 70 to 80% of the calorie intake of all the people in the world. But once we started to do that, we began a cascade of health problems, one of the most important of which is iron deficiency, and another one is a vitamin A deficiency. Vitamin A deficiency led to all kinds of infectious problems because we need vitamin A to protect ourselves from a number of infectious diseases. So the fact that we were lazy and adapted this this kind of food, which was easy to raise, easy to process, and above all, easy to store, made it possible to leave what was ordinarily a very healthy diet and end up with one that was simple to prepare, but carried with a lot of health hazards.
When I was reading about you yesterday, Amber, I was very pleasantly surprised that you described yourself as a carboholic. Because I could live, man can live by bread alone. I don't care what Dr. Kaczynski says. I love bread. I love pasta. Now, you are a paleo diet person.
Yes.
Have you forsworn bread and pasta and things like that?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there are
How
occasions.
Do you go on? What makes you, what makes you get up in the morning?
All the good food that I can eat. No, I mean, it's funny when you cut all of that stuff out of your diet for a long period of time. You know, when you first do it, it's hard. You do crave those things. But once you get it out of your system and you realize how much better you feel, because I had gone so many years with so many digestive issues that once I changed this my eating habits, I felt so much better. My energy was up. I wasn't sick all the time. My concentration was better. I did better in the gym. Mm-hmm. You know, just things really improved. And you don't really want to eat the processed stuff anymore. And when you do, you feel terrible.
I think both of you allege, and I think Dr. Kaczynski, you certainly do, that that grains are not good for us, never have been good for us, but we seem to have in recent years this plethora of incidences of people having gluten reactions. They're allergic to gluten, which is one of the ingredients in wheat. And I don't recall ever hearing about that before the 1990s or the 2000s. And is that because we've changed the fundamental grain structure of the product that we're growing because it's easier for Monsanto to give us those seeds and grow those products? Or is it because we always had these problems, we just never attributed it to gluten?
Well, I think your last point is correct one, Mike. The gluten intolerance is something that is very hard to diagnose, and celiac disease, which is really a severe form of gluten intolerance that occurs in people with a certain genetic makeup, is especially difficult to diagnose. And if we use as an example celiac disease, which is the worst form, it causes a wide variety of symptoms that go far beyond the intestinal tract. But if we look at patients with celiac disease, for instance, we find that the average time of that it goes by between the onset of symptoms, which can be fairly subtle, to the time of diagnosis is about 7 years. And they typically bounce around from one doctor to another because no one can come up with a diagnosis. Gluten intolerance is more subtle. It's not quite as severe. It tends to cause mostly GI problems. And it's like Amber described, you're kind of feeling out of sorts. You don't have quite as much energy as you ought to. Sometimes we blame that on the aging process. And some of these symptoms are so subtle and are not identifiable as being linked with a particular food because we have those foods virtually every day that is simply hard to diagnose. So gluten problems have been with us forever. In certain populations, they're more common. Gluten intolerance and celiac disease are very uncommon in people in the Middle East, which is where grains were first grown. And yet they're very common.
I have to take a break, Doctor. I'm sorry. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
920, and you're tuned into Charlotte Talks here on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. We're coming right back to our conversation about paleo living in just a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Lenoir Rhyne University graduate programs offering master's degrees in a variety of disciplines from the Hickory, Asheville, and Columbia, South Carolina campuses. Details at lr.edu/graduate. Coming up tomorrow, an Independence Day edition of Charlotte Talks. There are things every American should know about their country, like where it got its name, why we celebrate with fireworks on the 4th of July, and the original intent of the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, if you know or think you know or don't know any or all of those things, join us for an hour of conversation on stuff every American should know with the authors of a book of the same name. That's Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama ties approval of the Keystone Pipeline to greenhouse gas emissions. For this month's Environmental Outlook, the latest hurdle for the proposed tar sands project.
Join us for that on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. Talking about eating like a caveman, so we thought that would be appropriate to play. Of course, the Flintstones probably didn't have these dietary problems because they also got a lot of exercise. If you recall, they powered their car with their feet. we're joined here in the studio by Amber Lewis, owner and founder of Mod Paleo. Dr. Phil Gashinsky is a former clinical professor of pediatrics and the author of Health Secrets of the Stone Age. I had to interrupt you in the middle of a comment, doctor, because we had to go to a break, but you were talking about how the people who subsist on a Mediterranean diet don't tend to have these same problems with gluten intolerance and other digestive problems because they don't consume those grains, correct?
That's not quite it. Like what I was referring to is that in the Middle East, where they have been growing grains for 10 to 12,000 years, they have selected out people who are resistant to the gluten issue. For instance, celiac disease leads to childhood malnutrition. And so many people there who had the genes that led to celiac disease simply died off before they reached reproductive age. And so the people that survived are the ones who tolerate gluten just fine because they've been doing it for thousands of years. If we go to countries or areas of the world like Scandinavia, where grain production is only a couple of thousand years old, then we find that there is still a high incidence of celiac disease because enough of those people have survived so that they haven't weeded out the ones that didn't. The people who live around the Mediterranean probably also have some degree of gluten intolerance, but not as much as people, say, in Northern Europe.
Now, Amber, you say that our food chain is broken and the modern diet that has resulted is causing diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. We kind of touched on this before, but what do you mean by the food chain being broken?
Well, we place a high importance on grains and less importance on vegetables and meats.
So we're eating the wrong things.
Right, we're eating the wrong things. We make processed foods very accessible and easy to get. They're quick, fast, go for it. We don't have the things in place that would be educational for people to understand that they need to be making these foods and be prepared with these foods in their home. They need to go to farmers markets and buy their foods locally.
Now, your whole company, Mod Paleo,
yes,
is based on providing prepared paleo-based meals.
Right.
So all you have to do is take them out of the freezer and there they are.
Out of the fridge.
Out of the fridge, excuse me. Because they're cryogenically sealed, as I understand it. they were cooked in the Stone Age and cryogenically sealed. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, modern healthy meals.
But they're freshly made and they keep for 7 days in the refrigerator.
Yep.
You just open the package and there you are. Could people do this on their own, however?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and we encourage that. We started our company because people are busy and, you know, they don't have time to cook. They don't have time to go to the three markets to get all of these fresh items. And
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. So how do you – well, finish the sentence. I'm sorry.
People don't have time. So they need somebody to cook for them, and that's how I really started.
So how do you fix the food chain? Just by eliminating the things we've been talking about that are not good?
Supporting your local farmers. I mean, that's the first step, going and buying – beef and pork and chicken from your local producers and buying the vegetables and supporting the local
economy. Why is that important
here
to you? We've done a lot of shows on local foods, mm-hmm. but why is that important to you?
Because that's what's going to change the way that we purchase our food and the way that grocery stores buy their food as well. Supporting that local economy and getting your food from local sources, it brings money into our local economy. It gives money to these farmers so that they can continue doing their business.
But do you also vet them for best practices?
Oh, yes. Yeah. We work with farms that I've actually been to personally. We're working with our poultry farmer right now, actually, to get animal welfare certified. So that's very important to us as well.
And your other philosophy is that if something is growing out of the ground mm-hmm. and it's in season, mm-hmm. it's good for you.
Yeah.
Is there scientific evidence to prove that?
Well, I think, to go along with what Dr. Gajinski was saying, you know, if you are eating the foods that are produced locally, that is what your body is meant to process. And that's what's good for your body. You know, for me to go and try to eat a diet outside of where I live, a lot of people don't do well with that type of food.
Okay. Would you agree with that, doctor?
Yeah, I agree with that completely, Mike. What Amber's pointing out about farmers markets is spot on, in that if they can find fruits and vegetables, produce that's been grown locally, that hasn't been sitting in a warehouse or sitting on a truck for a couple of days, it certainly has maintained more of its nutritional value than something that has been possibly around, as in the case of apples, for instance, for months. Because so many of those nutrients are lost in storage and shipping.
Okay. Now, this is going to turn a lot of people off, what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. The paleo diet does not include sweets, pastries, ice cream, milk, cheese, or yogurt. Is that right?
That's correct.
Wow. Now, we obviously get something from these foods aside from pleasure. So how do those who eat a paleo diet make up for what we're taking out of the diet by not eating some of these things? I don't think sweets have very much in them except pleasure, but milk and cheese have calcium.
You also get calcium from vegetables. You get calcium from, there's a big push in the paleo template for bone broth. So you get a lot of your nutrients.
Bone broth?
Bone broth.
You just throw a bone in a pot of boiling water? Seriously.
Well, it's a great crock pot recipe, actually. You take the bone from grass-fed beef, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished. You put a little bit of apple cider vinegar in there, and you let it boil with the water, and it brings all the good nutrients out for you, and it's very, very nutritious.
What does it taste like?
Delicious.
So it's just a broth? You eat just eat the clear broth? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, she mentioned calcium coming from other food sources, doctor, and I think we talked about this before, when you were on the program before, that cavemen got their calcium from plants, and that the fossil evidence shows that they did not suffer from osteoporosis, as many people today do. Is that because they didn't live as long as people today live?
Well, that not living as long is the first thing that some people think of. When I give this talk to an audience, I point out very early in that presentation that about 10% of people back in the Stone Age made it beyond the age of 60. About 20% of modern Stone Agers that we refer to as hunter-gatherers make it past the age of 60. And we know from the fossil record that their bones were thick and strong. I just have people come into my office and complain when I told them that they needed to feed their children less milk and fewer dairy products. They would say, well, where's my daughter going to get her calcium? I said, the same place that cows get it. Cows eat grass. They don't have any other
source. We can't eat grass.
but green leafy vegetables have plenty of calcium, and so it's not an issue. Calcium is well absorbed from plants. And when you look at at population groups that have about half as much calcium in their diet as we do. We find also that their rate of osteoporosis and hip fracture is much less than ours. We have the highest intake, except for Scandinavia, in the world of dairy products, and yet we have one of the highest rates of osteoporosis and hip fracture, and that does not make any sense. The reason they can do so well in other parts of the world is that, number one, they exercise a great deal, and I certainly go along with the CrossFit concept, and the fact that they exercise on a regular basis and they get their calcium from plants is all they need to prevent osteoporosis.
Wow. I want to go back just briefly to these grains here, because there was one comment that you make, Doctor, that I think is pretty remarkable. You say that if we rid ourselves of grains in our diet, we can transform our health.
Absolutely. If I could wave a magic wand, Mike, I would eliminate all grains from the planet, because that's when so many of our disease processes began, and they were amplified by the milling process that began in the late 19th century that gave us refined grains. And it's those refined grains that have caused the monstrous epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes that we are facing now.
So it's not the high-fructose corn syrup?
Around, we're in trouble.
It's not the high-fructose corn syrup that seems to be in everything today? It's the grains?
It's not the fructose part of the corn syrup. It's the sugar. There's not much difference between the amount of fructose in table sugar and the amount of fructose in the high-fructose corn syrup. It's a difference between 55% and 50% and 45% being glucose. And table sugar is 50-50. High fructose corn syrup, depending on how it's produced, is about 55% fructose. And granted, fructose does have some adverse consequences because of the way the body processes it. That's only part of the story. The big problem is the sheer amount of sugars that we're taking in, which in some parts of the population, for instance, among adolescents, is 20 to 25% of the calorie intake comes in the form of sugar.
Wow. So this sounds to me, if you eliminate grains, all grains from your diet, if you don't eat sweets, you don't eat pastries, you don't eat ice cream, you don't drink milk, you don't eat cheese, you don't have yogurt. And this is a big craze right now of everybody eating Greek yogurt because it's supposed to be good for your digestive system. If you do all of these things, and that means you're on a paleo diet at this point, it would seem to me, that seems like a very major lifestyle change. Is that an adequate way to describe it, Amber?
I would say at first.
At first. How long did it take you? I know you were motivated to do this. Your husband started this, right?
No, I did.
Oh, you started, and he followed.
I brought him along,
okay,
kicking and screaming.
So how big a transition was this for you, and how big was it for him since he was drug along kicking and screaming?
I'll tell you, within 7 days, it was the first time I had not had heartburn almost my entire life. So
wow.
I immediately was like, okay, sold. we did it very strict for 30 days and then added some things back in once we had done
Why?
The 30 days. Just life, you know.
Beer was one of them, I'm told. Is that right? Is that
not
you?
For me?
Not for
no.
you. Is that for your husband?
Yes.
And beer is a grain product.
On occasion, yeah. He mainly drinks gluten-free beer, okay, but he will give himself a treat every once
so
in a while.
So what are your treats?
My treats, dark chocolate, gluten-free pizza.
That's my girl.
And red wine.
Well, red wine is a good thing. Doctor, I think you talk about red wine being something you don't have to give up for anything because it's good for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my doctor said I should drink a glass of red wine every day.
I agree with that.
And the only thing he did say is if you miss a dose, don't double up the next day.
Darn it.
So now that you've been on, how long have you been on this diet?
Going on 5 years.
And is it simple
yeah,
for you?
Very simple for me.
And I know that you run a company that manufactures ready-made right. food, so you can easily go into the company storeroom and get out some food to eat. But if you weren't connected with this company, mm-hmm. would it be easy for you to go out and eat? Would it be easy for you to go to the grocery store and find the ingredients and make these meals for yourself?
Yeah, I did it for 4 years before my company's a little over a year old. But before that, I did all of my shopping at farmers markets and the the organic grocery stores. I started this company because I love to cook and found out that I was actually pretty good at it, which is how I got started. So I did this on my own for 4 years. And I tell people, shop on Sunday, be prepared, have plenty of Tupperware.
Well, how do you go out and eat? Because you don't have any idea what's in the food they service in restaurants. Even if it's good, it's probably... I had something the other night that was so good, I knew it had to be just laden with butter. It was so good. And I thought, it's full of butter, it's full of salt, it probably has a couple of pinches of sugar in there. I don't know why, it doesn't need it, but it was great. So how do you go out and eat when you don't know what's in the food that they're fixing for you in the kitchen?
I ask a lot of questions. I want to know what type of oils they're cooking with. I want to know... you know, where their meat's coming from. If I'm at a restaurant that I know is not serving grass-fed beef, then I make a different choice. So really just asking questions, and I'm pretty picky in a restaurant. I'm that girl that asks for everything separately and on the side and all that good stuff. But, you know, and I tell them that I have a gluten allergy, because then they're a lot more aware and they pay attention to what's going on my plate. And I choose my restaurants wisely as well.
Dr. Gajinski, you say that we'd be healthier if we would eat mostly plants, leafy green and root vegetables, nuts, berries, and fruits.
Right.
And you also mentioned, I believe, potatoes. I don't think – are potatoes on your diet?
Sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. Where do potatoes, white potatoes, Idaho potatoes, where do they fall in the spectrum, doctor?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting topic, Mike, because the kinds of potatoes that are bred now for French fries and baking are bred in such a way so that their starch is highly branched. And that means that it breaks down into sugar very quickly and gives you a high blood sugar quickly. For instance, if you've ever eaten a French fry or a baked potato and you notice that it tastes sweet even before you've swallowed it, it's because the enzymes in your saliva have broken down that very accessible starch into the sugar components, and that's why it tastes sweet. McDonald's caught on to that years ago, and this is why they breed their potatoes in such a way so that it gives you that sweet taste even before it reaches your stomach.
But then sweet potatoes are on your paleo diet, and they're definitely sweet. So what's the difference between a sweet potato and a white potato?
Sweet potatoes are loaded with antioxidants, as an example. And one of the things about any kind of potato, whether sweet or regular potato, is that most of the nutrients are in the skin. So whether you eat a baked potato or a sweet potato, if you eat the skin, you're getting most of the nutritional value. And as an aside, I might comment about French fries. My term for French fries, Mike and Amber, is they are nutritional pornography.
Now, I grew up eating the potato skins because I don't know where that came from, but my parents said, eat the skin.
And your mom was very smart.
And then recently I've been told, don't eat the skin because you don't know where it was grown and you don't know what was in the soil, and there could be all kinds of contaminants and things like that in the skin even when they wash it, because it gets absorbed by the skin, so don't eat the skin, which is right.
Well, I think that if you scrub potatoes, as many people do, you get rid of most of those things. And something to keep in mind is that many of the insecticides that are used in processing plant foods break down in a matter of a day or two, so that most of them are gone by the time they make it into your pantry anyway. And so if you wash all plant foods before you prepare them, which I advise anyway, you'll get rid of most of those things.
Okay. We only have 30 seconds left, but Tony emails, is it possible to be both a vegetarian as well as maintaining a paleo diet? And I think that's, you can, right?
Well, it would depend. There's a couple of questions I would ask.
We'll come back and we'll talk about that with Amber Lewis, who's the owner and founder of Mod Paleo, and also Dr. Phil Gajinski, former clinical professor of pediatrics and author of Health Secrets of the Stone Age. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Good morning, it's 9:40, and you're tuned to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. We'll get you right back to more conversation about living the paleo lifestyle in just a moment. Support this morning comes from WFAE members and Griffin Brothers, providing the Charlotte area with tire and automotive care since 1961. Details about our 9 locations and current offers online at griffinbrothers.com.
Coming up next at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, President Obama tied approval of the Keystone XL pipeline to greenhouse gas emissions. For this month's Environmental Outlook, the latest hurdle for the proposed tar sands project. And then at 11 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show, singer and songwriter Barry Manilow joins Diane to talk about his life and career. It all starts at 10 o'clock, right after Charlotte Talks.
John Boyer, president and CEO of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art in Charlotte, a WFAE underwriter.
It's made a big difference in our general attendance. We always ask where people have heard about us, and it just seems more and more it's WFAE. Smart businesses that want to reach the most informed audiences will have to look at public radio and what it can bring them.
For more information, email underwriting at WFAE.org.
There's a man in the funny papers we all know. He lives way back a long time ago. He don't eat nothing but a bearcat stew. Well, this cat's name is Alley-Oo.
There's hardly a person alive today who remembers that cartoon in the paper, but he was a caveman who ate bearcat stew. I guess he's not following the strict paleo diet quite yet. We're here talking about eating like a caveman, the paleo diet, the Mediterranean diet, eliminating grains and being healthier, etc., with Amber Lewis, owner and founder of Mod Paleo, and Dr. Phil Gajinsky, author of Health Secrets of the Stone Age. There was a question from an emailer before the break about can you be both a vegetarian as well as maintaining a paleo diet? And there wasn't enough time to answer that question because there's some caveats here for you, right, Amber?
Yeah. With the paleo diet, when I have clients that do ask me that question, my first is if they ask if they eat eggs and if they eat fish, because I think it's easier to follow the paleo template if you do allow those things in your diet. You know, a lot of the basis of a true paleo diet is that the grass fed beef is where you get a lot of your nutrients and good omegas.
And why grass fed as opposed to corn fed? As many pieces of beef that we eat today are corn fed. Why?
The omega ratio. You want to have a good omega ratio between the omega 6s and the omega 3s. So you want the omega 3s to be higher, and then the corn fed beef that ratio becomes very diluted.
And Dr. Gajinsky, I said a minute ago that you believe we'd be healthier if we would eat mostly plants, leafy green and root vegetables, nuts, berries, and fruits. So if we were to do that, where does the protein come from if we don't eat beef or chicken or fish or something like that?
Well, plant foods do have some protein, but it's not as much as obviously is present in animal foods. And my feeling is that the paleo diet, people sometimes go off the track with beef, because the problem with beef, as Amber points out, is that feedlot beef is high in saturated fat, where what people should concentrate on is lean beef, if any at all, or lean animal products, which include poultry and fish. And you then get the benefit of the animal protein without the hazards of saturated fat. So I agree that if people are eating eggs and fish in their diet, they're getting all the protein that they need and don't need beef.
Okay. Let's take a phone call here from Jill in Charlotte. Jill, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hi, Mike. Thanks. I have just a quick comment. I went on the paleo diet for health reasons. I had been a vegetarian for about 20 years. So it was a big stretch, because without being able to eat grains or beans, I had to get my protein from somewhere. So I did start eating meat again, eating a lot of chicken and fish, excuse me. But I will tell you, I've never felt better in my life. My energy is even. I experienced some weight loss, effortless weight loss, except for the fact that I couldn't eat really what I wanted to eat. And it was an adjustment, but, you know, once I got over that initial period of missing certain foods in my diet, you know, the benefits were immediate. Within 3 days, I felt great.
Had you been ill, Jill, or did you suffer from allergies to gluten and things like that that you were aware of prior to going on this?
Well, you know, in hindsight, I think I'm sensitive to it. Uh-huh. Maybe not necessarily an allergy, but I think I was sensitive to it and sensitive to some grain.
You've talked, Amber, about feeling better almost mm-hmm. instantly on this diet as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it was amazing, and that's why I stuck with it long term.
And Dr. Kaczynski, when people do either go on a paleo diet, and I know you have a different slant on this, you focus on Mediterranean diets. If we were to go on if we would transition today from our normal American foods and go on this Mediterranean diet, how quickly would we feel better, look better, be better?
Well, I agree with Jill and Amber that it just takes a matter of days before you notice that difference. And it's true that making that change is a major change. However, it's pretty painless, and people adjust to it very quickly. It's like exercising. People who haven't exercised in the past who start get some pain and some soreness for various reasons that when they start an exercise routine, but they feel so much better within a couple of weeks that people have told me they'll never go back to not exercising again because they feel so much better in a short period of time. And certainly the same is true where these dietary changes are concerned. And one can go on a paleo diet and not have beef but have other kinds of meat and enjoy the same benefits.
Jill, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Ginger on Facebook writes, regarding grains, could someone touch on the fact that the wheat we now have is not the wheat God gave us? Wasn't it genetically modified in the 70s, and it now contains a protein that makes you want more of it, sort of like an opiate, thus our wheat addiction? Is this not the basis of the book Wheat Belly? Who wants to answer that?
Well, I can give that a try. It's true that the kind of wheat that we grow now is different from what's grown before, and the United States Department of Agriculture has pointed out that for the last several decades, the content of our plant foods, which includes wheat, has diminished the quantity of things like protein and zinc and iron in those products, and so we're not getting the same kind of nutritional value now from wheat and other produce that we had 50 or 100 years ago. So that comment is true. Whether it serves as an opiate or not, I'm not sure. I think the fact that so much of our grains are processed, they're milled, they're highly refined, and they give us what amounts to a sugar high. They raise our blood sugar very quickly is part of that. And as I pointed out, where potatoes are concerned, if you get in the habit of eating French fries because they taste sweet, that is a kind of addiction.
Ginger also had one more question, and that was, are honey and maple syrup approved as sweeteners on any of these diets?
I wouldn't say they're approved, but it is a natural form of sugar. And so with like a primal template, there's a couple of different ways to talk about paleo. But
what about stevia?
Stevia, in my belief, is also refined.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not sugar.
Well, but it's still a process. We're still talking about the refinement of something. So I always tell people, if you are going to have some type of sweetener, then use something like honey or maple syrup. But you also have to make sure that the honey and the maple syrup isn't refined as well, because a lot of the honey that we buy in the grocery stores is not real honey.
And what about oils, doctor? I know that olive oil is a key ingredient in a lot of the Mediterranean diets. Do you have to be careful? There was a story on one of the news services earlier this week that essentially said that sometimes you're getting olive oil that has been doctored with other vegetable oils, and you don't always know what's in the olive oil.
Well, that's true. The olive oil issue is a real can of worms, and that's because there are different standards. The state of California, for instance, has an olive oil council, and the initials are COOC, otherwise COOC, which I think a lot of people would associate with California. But the fact is that they do have standards. And if you look at olive oils that are produced with the various standards, there's one in Italy, and there's one in Spain, there's one here in the United States, that I think you can get decent products. And Expensive is not always better. You just have to shop carefully. It's important the way people store olive oil, and it should be kept in a dark pantry and in a dark bottle to keep it, to preserve its freshness.
Okay. Justin couldn't hold, but he wanted to know where nuts fit into the paleo diet. We know that Dr. Kaczynski recommends them in the Mediterranean mm-hmm. diet, so where do nuts fall into place here?
Seeds and nuts in moderation. It can be used as a fat. I always tell people to be careful not to make it your only fat. But yeah, nuts and seeds definitely in paleo.
So let's talk about what you eat
okay.
on this paleo diet every day. What'd you have for breakfast this morning?
I had 3 fried eggs with a little bit of sea salt.
Fried eggs?
Fried eggs.
Fried in what?
Coconut oil.
Okay. Doesn't coconut oil have bad fat in it or something? No?
Coconut oil is really good for you.
Okay.
Yes. So I use that in a lot of my cooking. So I fried 3 eggs in coconut oil. I had half of a sliced avocado and a little bit of cut up zucchini in the coconut oil as well.
Avocados got a bad reputation a couple of years ago. People said don't eat them because they're high in cholesterol or something like that. And doctor, I believe you say that's not true as well, right?
Well, that's true. Not only are they not high in cholesterol, Mike, but they have an ingredient called phytosterol, which actually helps to lower cholesterol. Avocados are a great food. Most of the fat in avocado is monounsaturated, which is like olive oil, and it's therefore a healthy fat. It's got a lot of antioxidants in it, and it's one of the better kinds of fruits that you can possibly eat, and I have no objection to avocados. I'd like to make a brief comment what Amber said about sugars and sweets, and it has to do with her chocolate coconut macaroons, which make my mouth water just thinking about that topic. And then when I see her ingredients for cupcakes, I see walnuts, almonds, cashews. And so it just goes to show that you can put nuts into dessert-type products and enjoy all the feeling of getting a dessert and still be getting healthy ingredients. And I commend you, Amber, for having come up with that recipe.
Thank you.
So what's for lunch?
For lunch, it will probably be a grass-fed ribeye and some broccoli.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's for lunch? How big a portion of the ribeye?
I typically do a 4-ounce portion. My husband will probably do a 6-ounce portion. Then we'll have a side of broccoli. I usually tell people with protein, look at the palm of your hand. That should be about the size of your protein. Okay. And then fill the rest of your plate up with vegetables. And then for your fat, whatever you can cup into your hand. So we'll add a half of an avocado or some olives or something like that.
And what about dinner?
Dinner won't be too different. We would probably do something like some chicken, some grilled chicken, or do like a ground chicken spaghetti with spaghetti squash in place of the pasta. And then we do a marinara sauce as well.
And you know, does it matter what time of day? There was an article in the paper a couple of days ago that they're discovering that you should eat earlier than we normally eat and stop eating like at 4 o'clock. Stop.
I always tell people eat when you're hungry. If you're eating this way and you've cut a lot of the processed foods out of your diet, your body will be a lot better at regulating your hunger so you don't overeat.
You've sent along a sample menu for people who are getting your foods from, from your company, Montpaleo. Menu for week of February the 4th is coriander chicken with gingered sweet potato puree.
Yes.
That's dinner?
Or lunch.
Or lunch.
Or breakfast.
Roast pork loin with kimchi.
Yes.
Excuse my ignorance, but what is kimchi?
Kimchi is fermented cabbage.
Really?
It is.
Is it
delicious.
Like sauerkraut?
It's more of an Asian-y, so it's like got a sesame type flavor.
Meatloaf and root vegetable hash. Is that like beets and stuff like that?
Yes. I can't remember if we did parsnips and carrots and rutabaga this week.
Pesto burger with zucchini pasta, chipotle chicken patty with braised carrots and escarole, pork burger with marinated eggplant. Is that because pork is available locally now in abundance?
We usually do 2 pork meals a week,
okay.
3 chicken meals a week, and then the rest will be the grass-fed beef.
That's the other thing, doctor, I want to talk about, because cavemen had a wider variety of foods that they ate than we do. We eat beef, we eat chicken, we eat pork. They ate squirrel, they ate all kinds of varmentia that were crawling around the ground. They ate deer. They had because they hunted. Are they and the game that they were eating, the meat that they were eating, was better than the beef that we eat today because it was out there wild. So what are we missing by not having access to all these other sources of animal protein?
Well, you make a good point. Back in those days, even if we look at Native Americans, they had literally 80 to 100 different kinds of animals that they used for food. And we are missing a lot by having to rely on only three big game animals, which are cows, pigs, and sheep. And that's all we have in our supermarkets. And it would be great if we could have more variety, but it's really hard to find some of those other animal foods. I can only comment that variety is really important, and the kinds of variety that Amber has in her menu I think matters a lot. One of the things that we need to realize is that our bodies are designed for a variety of things because different foods have different nutrients, and we have evolved to require many of them, many more than we get just in a handful of plant products that we get in our grocery stores.
I don't want to leave exercise out of this equation because people, I said at the very beginning of the show, we were not designed to sit for hours behind a computer screen and type all day.
Right.
The cavemen got up and they walked, they ran, they hunted. They were always moving around. Everything was hard. Everything was manual labor. Everything. And you got into this because of your CrossFit training regimen. Talk to me about what we should do for exercise if we don't want to be extreme about it.
Right. Cross training. Make sure you're not just running in a straight line. That's not really a good form of exercise because it's a repetitive motion. You do want to have running in your exercise regimen. But lift weights, that is the best thing you can do for your bones. It is so important to have some weight resistance. So really just mixing it up all the time, doing something different. And that's one of the big reasons that we were with CrossFit.
Princess on Facebook writes, as a low carber, I sympathize with paleo, but I disagree with the emphasis on protein over fat. To each their own. LP says, my husband and I are both paleo. We've been for 3 years. Our health has never been better. I have a genetic blood disorder that doesn't allow for iron stores. I'm chronically anemic, and I just had my last results. My ferritin levels increased 20 points, and they instructed me to stay on supplemental iron forever. What I didn't tell them is I haven't taken an iron supplement in 2 years. My values are totally influenced by my paleo.